हरे जय। गोपी जन बाल गिरिवर हरि, गोपी जन बाल्लव गिरिवर हरि, यशोदा नंदन व्रज जनन जन, यशोदा नंदन व्रज जनन जन, यमुना तीरमन छहरी, यमुना तीरमन छहरी हमने, जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी जय, गोपी जन बाल्लव गिरिवर धारी, यशोदा नंदन व्रज जनरंजन, यशोदा नंदन व्रज जनरंजन, यमुना तीरमन छहरी, यमुना तीर वनचारी, हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे हरे, हरे राम हरे राम 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 हरे हरे हरे, हरे कृष्णा हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे हरे, हरे राम 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 हरे हरे, हरे हरे कृष्णा हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे हरे, हरे राम 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 हरे हरे, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Ananta Goti Vaishnavarvinda ki jai, Granta Rashimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Gaura Premanande. So, Hare Krishna, everyone. Good morning. I'll be speaking in English. Will we be needing some translation? Okay. Whether they understand or not. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Narayanam namaskritya Naram chaiva narottamam Devim sarasvatim vyasam Tato jayamudirayet Nashta prayeshva bhadreshu Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya Bhagavati Uttamashloke Bhaktir Bhavati Naishtiki. We're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 5, Chapter 1, The Activities of Maharaj Priyavrata. And we have written verse 25, which is technically not a verse in the sense of being with meter. This is prose Sanskrit, and so it's an interesting challenge to chant. I'm going to just read this verse, the Sanskrit, and the next, the one which is written here is without purport. Verse 26 has a purport which we can read and discuss. Agni dre majifa yagyabahu mahavira hiranyareto krita prishta savanamedha titi Viti hotra kavaya iti sarva eva gni namanaha. The 10 sons of Maharaj Priyavrata were named Agnidra, Idmajiva, Jihva, Yajnabahu Mahavira Hiranyareta Gritaprishta Savana Medha Titi Vitihotra and Kavi. These are also names of Agni, the fire god. And the next verse is Ete Sham Kavir Mahavira Savana Iti Traya Asan Urdvaretasasta Atma Vidyayam Arbhavavat Arabhya Kritaparichaya Paramahansyam Eva Ashramang Abhajan. Three among these ten, namely Kavi, Mahavira, and Savana, lived in complete celibacy. Thus trained in brahmachari life from the beginning of childhood, they were very conversant with the highest perfection known as the Paramahansa Ashrama. And Srila Prabhupada's purport. The word urdvaretasa in this verse is very significant. Urdvareta refers to one who can control sex life and who, instead of wasting semen by discharging it, can use this most important substance accumulated in the body to enrich the brain. One who can completely control sex life is able to work wonderfully with his brain, especially in remembering. Thus, students who simply hear Vedic instructions once from their teacher could remember them verbatim without needing to read books, which therefore did not exist in former times. No books. Another significant word is arvabhavat, which means from very childhood. Another meaning is, quote, from being very affectionate to children. In other words, Paramahansa life is dedicated for the benefit of others. Just as a father sacrifices many things out of affection for his son, great saintly persons sacrifice all kinds of bodily comforts for the benefit of human society. In this connection, there's a verse concerning the six Goswamis. Tyaktva turnamasesha mandalapati shenim sada tuchavat bhutvadina ganesha ko karunaya kopi nakantashito. And Prabhupada doesn't quote the second half. How does the third line go? Radha Krishna. Tyaktva turnamasesha mandalapati shenim sadatu chavat putvadina ganesako karunaya kopina kantash. Then, goshantaviti. No. No. It's there, but it's not there. Just see the memory in the edge of Kali. Because of their compassion for the poor fallen souls, the six Goswamis gave up their exalted positions, asesha mandalapati, as ministers and took vows as mendicants, thus minimizing their bodily wants as far as possible. They each accepted only a loincloth and a begging bowl. Thus they remained in Vrindavan to execute the orders of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu by compiling and publishing various Vaishnav literatures. Om Agyana Dimirandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namah Sri Chaitanya Manovishtang Stapitam Yena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Kadamahyam Dadati Svapadantikam Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swamin Itinamine Namaste Sarasvate Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschatya Deshatarine Vancha Kalpaturubhyascha Kripa Sindubhya Evacha Patitanam Bhavanebhyo Vaishnavibhyo Namo Nama. He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dinabandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Rishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhaktavinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. I'm happy to be here for the short time that I am, Govardhan Eco Village. Some days ago, I was at Govardhan in Vrindavan, and we were having Govardhan Parikrama and so on. And one feature of the geography, you can say cultural geography, struck me this time. As many of you may know, the Goswamis, the six Goswamis, at least some of the six Goswamis of our Gaudiya Vaishnava tradition, spent much of their lives on the north end of Govardhan in Radha Kunda. In the area of Radha Kunda, they would live their very simple lives, as Prabhupada is describing here in the purport. They gave up so much took up simply Kopina Kanta, the loincloth, and Kanta is a... it's a chadar which is made up of scraps of cloth sewn together. It's a kanta. So they're living their very austere lives on the north end. On the south end of Govardhan is the town of Jatipur. And Jatipur is very much a center of the Sri Vallabha Sampradaya. So on the north end are the Gaudiyas, and on the south end are the Vallabhas, the Pushti Marga. And there's an interesting contrast in the ethos of these two traditions, where the Gaudiya tradition, I think it's fair enough, it's a generalization, but still, that the Gaudiya tradition very much emphasizes renunciation, austerity, and the Vallabha Sampradaya, the Pushti Marga, they emphasize very much the householder culture of opulence, worshipping Krishna in great opulence as householders. Some years ago, I met a Western devotee who was initiated in the Vallabha Sampradaya, and he invited me to come and meet several of the senior acharyas of the Vallabha Sampradaya. He said, they're all in one place for a big wedding in Mathura. You please come and I will introduce you. So... it was very interesting. It was very nice to meet them. And one thing struck me about all of these acharyas, they all looked very well fed. They were all householders. are very, all very well fed, with big handlebar mustaches. And I thought, interesting, they're worshiping Krishna, we are worshiping Krishna. Different mood is there. Different mood. The Bhagavatam is arguably very much emphasizing and praising and celebrating the spirit of renunciation. So that's what's being mentioned in the second verse, that three of the 10 sons of Maharaj Priyavrata are renunciants. And as such, it said here, they become conversant with the highest perfection. Conversant with the highest perfection, known as Paramahansa Ashram. Paramahansyam Eva Ashramam Abhajan. They were practicing this culture. So we hear a lot about renunciation and we say, yes, good idea. Thank you, but no thank you. Or, yes, renunciation when I'm older. Or, yes, renunciation, I will only look at my mobile phone after 9 o'clock in the morning. Or we make some little vows perhaps for ourselves. Or perhaps, yes, renunciation, so on Ekadashi I will not eat any grains. Or maybe as we go a step further, on Ekadashi I will only eat fruit. Like this, we work out little adjustments for ourselves to try to pursue the spirit of renunciation, because we understand Vairagya is a good thing. And Krishna tells us in the Gita that if we want to learn to control our minds, there's two things which we do well to cultivate together in complementing each other. Abhyasena tu kaunteya vairagyena cha grihyate, which is, I don't know who's quoting who. Patanjali is quoting Krishna, let's put it that way. Patanjali also says the same thing in the yoga, in his Yoga Sutras. Okay, so practice, abhyasa, vairagya, cha, the two together is what is going to bring about that which Arjuna was saying is not possible. He was saying, controlling the mind, forget it. It's like trying to control the wind. And initially, Krishna agrees with him. Asang shayang mahabahu. Mano dur nigrahang chalam. He says, you're absolutely right, Arjuna. Very difficult to control the mind. And maybe for a split second, Arjuna is thinking, ha, I got him. But then in the same verse, Krishna says, abhyasena tu kaunteya vairagyena cha grihyate. It is possible. How is it possible? By the combination of these two principles, practice and detachment. Practice, what is practice? I like to give the example of learning to play a musical instrument. Some of you maybe can play some musical instrument. Anyone? Any saxophone players here? No. bass guitar? Anyone? No. No one will dare admit. I know. Kartals. Yes? Bass guitar. Really? Wonderful. So you know that you don't play bass guitar without doing some practice, right? When I was small, I was being taught piano by my mother. And it was, you know, every day you have to sit down and do your half-hour practice. It was kind of a challenge for me. practice, we say in English, practice makes perfect. But what does practice mean? It means something done regularly and sufficiently frequently enough so that there is a cumulative effect, right? You don't want to practice one day and then wait a month and then practice again. That's not going to help very much. It has to be regular. So, for example, nityam bhagavata sevaya, the word nitya can mean eternal. It can also mean regular, every day. Nityam bhagavata sevaya. So that's part of our practice. Vairagyena cha grihyate. Also, vairagya, detachment. And here is where I'd like to make a suggestion of a practical practice, which you may find helpful, you may find useful in your own culture of Krishna consciousness. And this is to practice it's a kind of a technique, a simple technique, for dealing with all sorts of emotions. Because if we want to cultivate the higher emotions of spiritual life, of genuine attachment to the Lord, the term bhava is used in our literature as a kind of all-inclusive term. It can mean emotion, and it is also a stage to which we aspire, which is just on the threshold of the perfection of devotional life, which is prema. So bhava, we want emotion. But alas, I experience, perhaps you experience, occasionally, perhaps frequently, various emotions which you don't feel are particularly conducive for spiritual life. Sometimes we feel angry at someone for something they said, for something they did, for something they did not do, and so on. Sometimes we feel grief. We feel sad. We may feel sadness at the loss of a dear friend. We can feel all sorts of desire. I want this, I want that, I want the other thing. And we may work out in our minds how that wanting is for Krishna. And it may be so, it may not be. A major obstacle for many of us is apathy. Apathy is the attitude, I cannot do it. We're being urged to do so many things, to accomplish so much in spiritual life, to become something we feel maybe we are not. And so inside we may feel, I can't do that. I can't. Forget it. Like Arjuna. Arjuna was saying, I can't control my mind, right? I'm not able to do this. So we have a variety of emotions. Another emotion that can be a big obstacle for us is pride. And many of the narratives in the Bhagavatam are describing how one or another person, devotee or not devotee, is confronted with their pride. Krishna confronts Indra with about his pride by setting up this situation with Govardhan Hill, the worship of Govardhan instead of Indra. Indra's insulted. Indra expresses his anger. And Krishna's very sweet response and very gentle response is simply to lift Govardhan Hill and create by this a 7 day, 7 night, non-stop darshan of himself within a temple of which he is the central pillar. All to address Indra's problem, which is his pride. So the point is, we have all sorts of emotions which can be obstacles to us, isn't it? Now, sometimes these emotions will fester. You know the word fester? Yeah, what would be a Hindi term for fester? Parna? Parna. Palna. Okay, so like a festering infection, it becomes more of an infection, it expands. So emotions can be there, which we sort of push into the back of our consciousness, but they're still there, and they can be quite destructive. We may have an attitude about a particular devotee, which is not very healthy. It's a great concern for Vaishnavas to have a favorable attitude to all devotees. Some may, we naturally have closer friends, but we want to have favorable attitude toward all the devotees. So what to do? This is where I want to suggest a kind of a technique, and this comes back to the theme. We're talking about vairagya, or detachment, or renunciation. Here I want to talk about detachment from emotions which are not helpful for your spiritual life. And this, do you want to hear this technique? Okay. It has two steps. The first step is to recognize and acknowledge whatever it is, and not to judge yourself for whatever it is. Let's take the example of anger. And it can be something extremely minor. Perhaps... An example, you're expecting that someone is going to call you on the phone at a certain time, and the person doesn't call you at that time. So you become initially perhaps concerned because you thought it's important. The call is not coming. At some point, you feel some anger. Why is this person not calling? Or you're calling them and they're not answering. So it's not a big thing, but it's annoying. So what to do with that? Well, first of all, acknowledge it. Look at me. I'm angry about this. How interesting. Not how terrible or how whatever, but just, how interesting. What an interesting phenomenon. You know the word phenomenon? It's something that you just perceive. It's in the phenomenal world. So what an interesting thing. Here I am being angry about this, whatever it is. So you're acknowledging it. Okay, I feel some anger about this. And you can actually kind of examine that feeling. What is it about this feeling that it's, you know, you can even look at your, consider your physical aspects. We learn in the Bhagavatam when there's anger, Lord Shiva manifests in the forehead, in the chest, like that. We may, with very intense anger, experience that these pressures. But you can just be aware of you can become conscious of that feeling. That's step one. Do you want to know what is step two? No? No. Huh? Huh? He raised his hand. They raised their hand too. Okay, at least three of you want to hear the Step two is you ask yourself a question. Asking ourselves a question is awakening the buddhi. And it's awakening the buddhi to open up the manas. The manas, the mind, tends to keep closed and be connected only to the senses and the sense objects. Indriyani pranyahur indriyebhya parang manaha manasastu parang buddhe yo buddhe paratastu sa. There's a hierarchy. On the bottom end are sense objects, then senses, then mind, then intelligence, then atma, the self. But the mind tends to be giving its attention and forming itself around the senses and the sense objects. And it tends to close off from the buddhi, from the intelligence, which means it's closed off from the self, from the atma, which means it's closed off from paramatma, right? So what do we want to do here? We want to open up the mind, and how do we do that? With the intelligence, and how does the intelligence do that? With a very simple question. Do you want to know what the question is? The question is, could I, just for now, let go of this feeling? And what's interesting about the question, two things are interesting. One is, you qualify it with just for now, because that makes it easier for your mind to consider actually doing what the question is suggesting. But the question itself is neutral, and the answer could be, no, I can't let this go. Now you have to keep yourself from judging yourself negatively by that no answer. Because you may genuinely not be ready to let go. There may be some function. An example, fear. There are situations when it's a good thing to feel fear for your own protection. If there's a poisonous snake nearby, to feel fear may be a very good thing to have. It's not a time when you ask yourself, could I let go of this fear, and say, yes, I can let go of it, and then go up and embrace the snake. So sometimes the no is, in any case, whether it's appropriate or not, you're just allowing yourself to say yes or no. Could I let this go? Just for now is saying, don't worry. If you want to take your attachment again 10 minutes later, that's okay. But for now, could you let go of this? And the answer could be, well, yes, actually I could. And when you've come to this, you've opened up your mind. Even if the answer is no, you've started to sort of penetrate your mind, which up until now has not even considered yes or no, because the answer is no in any case. Now, I gave a very simple example of a phone call you're expecting and so on, and it's very, I've personally found hugely helpful to sort of practice abhyasa, even with little things, little annoyances, little fears, all kinds of things, that I just get a little bit conscious to ask myself this question, could I let this go? And what I've found is that this is incredibly empowering, so that when it comes to the bigger issues, the deeper challenges that we all have, that we can start chipping away at those attachments. When we can really start chipping away at the emotional baggage which is holding us back from the bhava, which is what we're aiming for in Krishna consciousness, then we're getting somewhere. So I think that's maybe, what do you think? Is that something that could be useful for you? We don't usually hear this sort of thing in a Bhagavatam class. Therefore, I'm seeing some expressions like, you know, when is he going to start giving a usual Bhagavatam class? Sorry, that's how I am. In the beginning of this purport, Prabhupada mentions the word which is in the verse, urdhvaretasa. And it took me way back to the very beginning days when I joined the devotees. There was one other brahmachari. This was in Germany. There was one other brahmachari. His name was Urdhvareta Das. We became good friends. He was American, I was American, and he had stories from his time in fighting in Vietnam, and he was an interesting character. But at the time, I had no idea what urdhvaretas means. But, you know, later I understood, and then I thought, that's a very interesting name to have. But I believe it's one of the names of Vishnu. He whose retas goes up, he whose semen rises. Okay, these are a few thoughts. If you have any reflections or comments or questions, we can discuss. Yes, go on.
Thank you, Maharaj, for a mind-opening class. you mentioned about how, you know, we need our spiritual intelligence to be awakened. And Srila Prabhupada has often referred to as cow milk and how it enhances the spiritual intelligence, and you have also written a book on the same subject. So, you know, apart from the Shastric quotations which are there in scriptures, is there any research also available nowadays on the correlation between the impact of cows on?
There's one devotee in America, Purushottam Kshetra Prabhu, Purushottam Krishna, Purushottam Kshetra. He's at Gita Nagari presently. He did a lot of research on this, because at one time he had a job that gave him access on internet to you know, scientific journals and so on. So he did a lot of research, And he came to understand that there is a particular chemical substance that is very much needed or beneficial for the nerves and the brain. I forget the term. It's one of these extremely long names of chemicals, and then there's an abbreviation, which I don't remember just now. But he said this is a substance which is in certain plants which cows eat when cows are able to graze freely. It's also available in algae, and so there is some, I don't know, companies who, you know, make this into a business. Cows which are, you know, not grazing freely, how much of this they are getting is questionable. And so how much benefit there is for us is questionable. The practicality, I'm trying to remember, the practicality, he said, of getting this from algae, I think he was saying is very limited because of the costs involved in producing. So therefore, it's perfectly right what Srila Prabhupada is saying, that we drink the milk of cows. But there's all these conditions. Yes, if it's milk which is coming from cows who have been grazing freely and getting these different sorts of plants that they can take this chemical from. It's something which we cannot produce ourselves in our bodies, and so they become a medium. Cows, of course, are ruminants, and ruminants are it's not that only cows are ruminants. There's several different animals. Animals that eat grass and can take that as nourishment. We cannot eat grass and be nourished by it, right? But cows can. It's quite a mystical thing, really. They have their four stomachs and they can transform grass into milk in their digestive system. And that milk, which comes from that grazing, that will be beneficial for the brain. That's the understanding this devotee came to. Yeah. Yes.
Thank you, Maharaj. Maharaj, you gave the technique of how to control our emotions by asking two questions. First is considering that we have this problem, recognizing it, then asking a question. Maharaj, but in Bhagavad Gita, when it is said that first we have to start controlling the senses and then the mind will be controlled. So let's say when we are trying to chant, our mind should be controlled. So that happens when we control our senses, like restricting our food, restricting our other senses from sense objects. And then when we try to control, our mind comes in control. Similarly, in this case also, I think it's also important to control our senses first. Mm. And then the mind will have that determination to ask, to recognize it, and then start asking the question. Is that so, Maharaj? I'm just...
Yes, it's a good point, of course. It's a kind of spiral process. We, you know, step... some machine is telling me things. We start with controlling the senses, but then even that, how do we start controlling the senses? Because we've heard something, and our mind and intelligence says, well, that makes sense. Let me control my senses, right? So it's not, what is it that's what is it that's enabling you to control your senses? It's your mind, your intelligence. And then by controlling the senses, you're able to better control your mind, which enables you to open the mind to the intelligence. But what I find is this is extremely powerful. A manifestation of intelligence. Well, Prabhupada's Shastra says one of the functions of intelligence is to doubt. Skepticism is not necessarily a bad thing. We need, it can be it can be life-saving sometimes to be skeptical. We don't believe everything that everyone tells us, right? So we're discriminating. So that's a function of the intelligence. And this doubting, one way of exercising it. Actually, the notion of exercise I find helpful also. Abhyasa means practice, and another example of practice is lifting weights. You start with, you know, 5 kilos, and then you can work up, and eventually you're lifting 100 kilos, maybe. So we're strengthening our intelligence. Of course, we're doing this especially by hearing. We hear Shastra. Krishna says in the Gita, one who hears this teaching is worshiping me by his intelligence. But that only works when we're applying what we hear, right? You can look at the weights on the floor in front of you all day long, but until you're actually lifting them, it's not going to do anything for you. So one way of applying, which is, it's both things, it's practice and it's abhyasa and it's vairagya, in such a sort of gentle way, asking yourself, you don't have to do any group therapy, you know. It's you and yourself, and you're just asking yourself, could I let this go? And then that is opening up. And this can go all the way back to controlling the senses. You can strengthen your ability to control the senses. One of the emotions that you have, I've given an example of anger, but one emotion is just desire, kama. You can ask yourself, could I let this go? Is my life going to collapse in on itself by letting this go? You know, and that's waking your mind and waking your intelligence, so that you're more effectively able to control this, the senses. And like this, it's a kind of spiral which elevates you eventually to what we're all aiming for, Krishna Prema. Does that make any sense? Or am I just babbling? Okay. Right. On that note, thank you all very much. Govardhan Eco Village ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Granth Raj Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Gaur Premanande.
Hare Krishna. Thank you, Maharaj, for accepting our request and coming here and blessing with your association. Let us express our gratitude to His Holiness Krishna Kshetra Swami Maharaj by loudly chanting, Haribol, Haribol, Haribol. And where can we get your books in case someone is interested in the books on the cows? And
the cow book is available open access, digitally downloadable, free of charge and legal download. You can search the title of the book and it'll come immediately, the page. The book is called Cow Care in Hindu Animal Ethics.
Cow Care in Hindu Animal Ethics.
Okay. Yeah. Thank it's you. Part of a book series on animal ethics, which is the philosophical subject of how should human beings relate with animals.
Thank you very much.